go ahead and get started. Please bear with me, those of you who are here. I'm running tech and running the meeting at the same time, so it's a little bit of a challenge. At any rate, the meeting was requested by the Village Board of Trustees, who unanimously directed staff to work with residents to research the issue of potential improvements to the advisory body volunteer process and collect discussion, input, research, and possible changes to the process. As I noted at the top of the meeting, this is not a meeting of the Village Board of Trustees. This is a community forum, and we thank you for participating tonight. So just give me one more second to see if this works. Oh. All right, we've got some screens up. So John, if you need to move, because for whatever reason that screen does not appear to be working tonight.
I'm good.
Okay, thank you. So as we move through the meeting, I wanted to just briefly overview our agenda for tonight. As you may have heard or seen when you joined the meeting, it is being recorded, and the information that is being gathered tonight will be presented to the Village Board of Trustees for their consideration. The agenda was posted online, but this is just a brief review of what is on the agenda for tonight. I'll start with a very brief introduction, and I have a few slides, as you can see here, that I'd like to run through. And then we will turn it over for public comment. And at the conclusion of that, we'll move on to just discussing what the next steps are and what the expectations are coming out of this meeting. So the village currently has 11 advisory bodies and commissions, and those are boards, committees, and commissions. Plus there are two ad hoc advisory groups or advisory committees, ad hoc committees. The terminology can be a little bit interchangeable. So the important point is those that are standing and those that are ad hoc, meaning engaged for limited purpose. The table that we have here summarizes the 11 advisory bodies that the Village Board of Trustees currently has. Five of those bodies are created by state statute, and they account for 21 of the overall total of appointed officials in the Village of River Forest. These commissions and boards that are created by statute, the appointment process and the appointment authority rests within the state statute regarding how those appointments are made, and that authority belongs to the village president to present officials for appointment, and the Village Board of Trustees retains the authority to approve or not approve those appointments. For example, there is a state statute that establishes the Plan Commission, and that statute identifies that the village president makes the appointment and the village board either consents or does not consent to that appointment. Of the remaining standing boards, committees, and commissions, there are six that are not created by statute. Those groups represent 31 of the total appointments of standing boards, commissions, and committees. When these groups are not created by statute, they're created by village legislation, so either a resolution or an ordinance. Resolutions and ordinances have to be approved by the Village Board of Trustees. Those authorizing documents, that authorizing legislation, identifies how those appointments are made, and again, grants authority to the village president with the advice and consent of the Board of Trustees to make those appointments. The enabling legislation is consistent across the boards and commissions, and this is consistent with other communities and how they do it. Certainly communities are free to create other systems, but ultimately the appointment authority rests with the village president and Board of Trustees. This is in the village code, and it has been in the village code for decades, and that is how we do it today. So I want to just briefly review the current process that one would follow in order to become a volunteer on an advisory body. The village accepts applications online for boards, committees, and commissions at any time, regardless of whether or not a vacancy exists. The online application process was launched several years ago to make it easier for candidates to express interest in serving on a village advisory body. Any resident can encourage another resident to apply, and we accept applications at all times. When applications are accepted, they're received and acknowledged by the deputy village clerk, who maintains those records. The village periodically advertises the availability of the online application portal through its communication channels, such as e-news and social media. And when a vacancy occurs, the deputy clerk provides the applications to the village president for the vacant position. The village president reviews those applications and contacts prospective applicants regarding their interest in serving on that advisory body. Those that are determined to be a good fit, taking into consideration their interest and experience, are submitted to the Village Board of Trustees for approval. The Village Board of Trustees receives those applications as part of their board meeting packet, and they consider the recommendations of the Village President at a public meeting. The Village Board of Trustees then casts a vote on all recommended appointments and has final approval power. Once appointed, officials are required to participate in training regarding the Open Meetings Act. They are required by village ordinance or village policy to complete the annual statement of economic interest. And depending on the type or nature of the advisory body, there may be additional training that they undergo, for instance, with regard to land use policies or land use regulations if they're involved in the zoning board or the development review board. So as I stated earlier, this meeting was requested by the village board, who unanimously directed staff to work with residents to research the issue and present it to the village board for discussion, input, and possible changes to the process. In evaluating the current process, can everybody see the screen okay? Okay. In evaluating the current process, staff identified several potential improvements, particularly as it relates to how the village makes the community aware of existing vacancies, the appointment process, and the post-appointment resources made available to advisory body members to help them familiarize themselves with their new role and the role of that advisory body. So some of the potential improvements that we've identified are to utilize the village's communication channels. Again, we have social media, e-news, and the village's website, and we have a pretty large reach with those communication channels to regularly advertise vacancies. So one of the pieces of feedback that we've already gotten is that occasionally the community may not know when a vacancy exists. And so we can take that information and broadcast it out to the community to generate interest in those vacancies. We do, as I mentioned earlier, maintain a standing list of people who have applied in the event that a vacancy becomes available, but we're happy to take applications at any time. We will continue to utilize those communication channels, and we can utilize them more frequently to encourage application even if no vacancies exist. We can also use those channels to explain how the appointment process works so that it's very clear to residents how they can apply and what the village will do with those applications and how they would be considered in the future. Just give me 1 second to get through everything, Mindy, and we'll get to you. We'd also think there's an opportunity to better explain the roles, responsibilities, and accomplishments of the existing advisory bodies and how the public can be engaged in the work of these groups. We think our advisory bodies do a tremendous amount of work on behalf of the community, and I think we can do probably a little bit better job of celebrating their successes and celebrating the ways that they add to the quality of life for residents in the village of River Forest. Thank you. Oh. Thanks, John. I appreciate that. We also think that we can share information with community partners to extend our reach to our audience of prospective volunteers. As I said before, we have quite a few people who, oh gosh, thank you. We have quite a few people who are already signed up to receive our communications, but there's certainly always opportunities for broader reach, so we're happy to try to do that. We are happy to share information with new residents when they move into the community to understand the multitude of opportunities that exist and that could potentially exist for them and how they can become engaged in their community. I know something that we hear with some frequency is, you know, I just want to get involved. I just want to get back. This is a great way to become involved in my community and a great way to meet fellow community members and become engaged. So we think we can use our contact with new residents to let them know about those opportunities. And then I think we can also assist potential members in understanding what conflicts of interest are. I think there is sometimes some misunderstanding of what a conflict of interest may be. And so I think, you know, helping people understand that up front might be a little bit helpful to them. In addition, we took a look at the post-appointment process for newly elected or appointed officials and identified potential improvements after they've been appointed to ensure that they understand their roles and responsibilities. So we are looking at creating a guide for appointed officials with key information such as Open Meetings Act training. If you're an appointed or an elected official, you know that you have to go through that training. information regarding the Freedom of Information Act and the village records that are subject to public inspection, information regarding the statements of economic interest that must be filed annually by all elected and appointed officials and staff. Again, talking about conflicts of interest and where they might exist so that as commission members or board or committee members come into those meetings, they know how to handle those issues when they come up to the extent that they ever do. We can also provide additional training of reference materials. Again, as I mentioned, land use policy and land use regulations are an area where I think we can provide more information on our website. And to the extent that there's other materials for other advisory bodies, we're happy to provide that as well. I think we can do a little bit better job of defining the roles and responsibilities of advisory bodies and positions within them. For example, what is the role of the chairperson, the member, and an ex officio member, to the extent that some of our advisory bodies have those positions on that group. And then just ensuring that the most recent rules of procedure are available for each advisory body so they understand how meetings are conducted, not just within the context of Robert's Rules of Order, although there's some overlap with that, but also within, particularly those meetings where public testimony may be accepted. I think we can increase outreach from advisory body chairpersons and staff liaisons to newly appointed officials to help make sure they understand who we are, how we're there to support them, and what we can do, what they should expect, getting packets, when those would be delivered, what they need to do to bring themselves up to speed on different committee or commission business. And so whatever we can do to be a good resource, I think, we're happy to explore that as well. We do some outreach already, but we're always willing to do more and help people acclimate a little bit faster. And I know in my contact, I'm currently staffing 5 different advisory bodies, and I know that in that capacity, the chair people are usually pretty good about reaching out to newly appointed officials and introducing themselves and bringing them up to speed and helping to make them feel welcome at their first meeting in particular. The Village has a diversity, equity, and inclusion advisory group that will be holding its first meeting next week. Within their charge is the assessment of the Village, its policies, practices, systems, and structures. And so the entire Village will be an open book in that process. And then also giving some consideration to engaging existing officials to identify potential improvements and making sure they feel that they are supported, particularly by Village staff, and that they have the information that they need to do their jobs. So those are the different recommendations regarding the post-appointment process that we have gathered so far. But obviously here tonight, I'm going to be talking a lot less in just a minute and listening a lot more and taking public input. So with that, I will turn this over to public comment. I would ask that, because there are several individuals who are signed up to speak, that you limit your comments to 5 minutes to ensure that we give everybody an opportunity to speak. In order to keep the meeting moving, if there's something someone else has said that you agree with, please feel free to just let us know that you agree with that comment, and then you can share any additional comments that haven't already been made. And again, just to try to keep it moving and try to be respectful of everybody's time. And if you have any information or materials that you would like to share with me, you're welcome to do that. I will put my email address in the chat box here in just a moment, as soon as I stop talking. But you can also find my email address on the Village's website. Again, my name is Lisa Shiner, and I'm the Acting Village Administrator. So I will stop sharing my screen at the moment, and we will move on to public comments. And I will go ahead. Yes, Mindy.
Can I just ask a question?
Yes. Can you do me a favor and go to the podium? Just because we have members here that are on Zoom, and I want to make sure everyone in the audience can hear okay.
You mentioned that we use the e-newsletter and the website as two of the major vehicles for communications and recruitment. I was wondering if you know how many people subscribe to the newsletter and how many people follow the Facebook page.
I would have to go look at the Facebook page, so give me a few minutes to pull that together. But in terms of the newsletter, I think our reach is in the 2,500 to 3,000 email address range every time a newsletter goes out. And looking
Thank
at
you
data,
very much.
Yeah, sure. And looking at the data that we see coming in from recently, we moved over to Constant Contact for our e-newsletters, and that gives us the ability to track metrics and open rates and other readership data related to our newsletter, and we find that we have a pretty good readership level of that. So there was a great comment in the chat feature. If you don't mind me sharing, it's Lisa. Would you share in the chat the name of who is speaking from the community room, as you can't see those individuals via Zoom? That's a great comment. Thank you, Megan, for sharing that. That was Mindy Creedy, and I'll be happy to do that for those of you who are on Zoom and can't see people here in the room. So thank you. Great suggestion. So with that, I will invite John Grant. Could you please come up to the podium and share your comments?
Hello. Do you mind? I have the statement from Johan Bass as well.
Yes.
Do you mind if I read his first?
Not at all. Please feel free.
Okay. This statement is read by John Grant at my request. My name is Johan Bass, currently in my second year as a traffic and safety commissioner of the Village of River Forest. I have lived in the village for 23 years. My appointment to the Traffic and Safety Commission in 2019 has a mysterious backstory. On April 18, 2013, one night before the village election, I made the first and only call to Kathy Adusi. Since she was running for village president, I asked her to explain her platform to me. In that conversation, I told her that I served on the 2008 flood task force appointed by Frank Paris. I explicitly requested that she consider me for any service on a committee should she win as president, given my previous service to the village. Kathy Adusi was elected village president the next day. It was not until 2017, 4 years after my 2013 conversation, that I received from Kathy Adusi a form to compile basic data. 2 years later, 2019, I was invited to serve on the Traffic and Safety Commission. This invitation came 6 years after my request to serve in 2013. In a Facebook posting Kathy Adusi posted this year, she stated that I waited 2 years, which is untrue. I was invited to serve 6 years after my request was made to her. Why did she send me the form 4 years after 2013 in 2017 without my prompting her? Kathy Adusi never heard back from me during the entire period from 2013 until she sent me the form in 2017. Did she eventually remember my request of 2013, then sent me a form for recording my name, address, and other pertinent information in 2017? Whether I misremembered the period as 8 years or in reality 6 years until the commission invitation arrived in 2019, it is clear that I waited an inordinate number of 6 years. The solution? We need a process that is understandable, fair, and predictable. Such a process will avoid the mystery of six-year waits. The process, preferably with term limits, should provide certainty and eliminate the perception of an arbitrary process. That's it from Johan.
Thank you.
Okay, in terms of my comments, well, let's see. First, I want to say thank you for the presentation. I think what we need in the village on this particular topic is, respectfully, it's much, much, much more than a short presentation. Good evening. So I'm John Grant, River Forest resident. I want to address two things. First, what are the problems with the system that have brought us to this review process? And second, how are we going about fixing those problems? So what are the problems with the system? One, the system is not managed well. Currently, we have dozens of expired or vacant seats on committees, as well as a few expired chairperson seats and other committees without definition. At the same time, there's no discussion by the board about what to do about these seats, how to recruit residents for these seats, and how to process applications and so on. Two, we have lots of residents' complaints about the system. including residents who reach out but receive no follow-through, or residents who are removed committees for unknown reasons, or residents who feel their work is undermined on committees, and many other complaints. Throughout all the complaints is a frustration with the lack of transparency. Nobody knows how or why decisions are made. Three, the system lacks basic definition and policies and procedures. For example, there's no guidance on what types of talent should be on each of the different committees. No guidance for balancing fresh faces with institutional memory. A hazy application process with no guidance on interviews or other aspects of the application. Not enough input from board members. Now let's look at the political process for trying to do something about this. What is the Village Board doing to solve this problem? Unfortunately, here again, there's a lack of transparency and process. One, who will be tasked with oversight for this review process? When the commission process was placed on the board meeting and discussed in February, President Ducey mentioned that resident Jan Sager had done research on the topic and she would be sharing that. And then at the board meeting last week, when I made public comment asking for more definition on the board's plan of attack on this issue, President Ducey again mentioned that, quote, Jan Sager has been doing a lot of research. I ask that the president clarify what she means by this. Does she mean to turn this process over for residents to research? Does she mean that Lisa Shiner, amongst her many other duties, will head up research? What role will trustees play in the process? Are the trustees not involved with the research process? And are they giving no direction to staff or outside consultants or attorneys for this process? I ask that the Village Board define exactly who will play which part in this process. Two, what is the goal of the process? President Ducey said at the board meeting last week that the intent is to come up with a policy document that can be posted on the website. Is that the consensus of the board? Are we talking about making absolutely no changes to the process and have these changes codified with an amendment or ordinance? Is it simply a type of description document that we're looking for? I asked the Village Board to define very clearly what the goals are here. And by the way, Lisa, you mentioned in your opening comments that the board unanimously directed staff to have this meeting, essentially, and to decide to research this way. Are you saying that the board voted on that?
I'm saying there was a discussion in February and staff asked for direction, and this is the direction that staff was given.
Okay, so in that case, I would say there wasn't a vote, and what we need to clarify is the role that we need to clarify what the board wants. President Ducey has mentioned several times that we're following the municipal code. Is the suggestion then that because we satisfy a minimum code requirement, that there needs to be no change in our process, even if it's failing, only a change in communication? Let's be clear, the municipal code is a starting point. It's a floor, not a ceiling. Trustee Bochner just provided an excellent example with the LGBTQ+ flag initiative of how to adhere to codes and innovate beyond them. So let's clearly define the goals. What are we working towards? Stagnation or innovation? Four, we don't need to do this in a bubble. I know for a fact that other municipalities are eager and willing to compare notes and collaborate with River Forest in the improvement of this issue. We don't need to do this in a vacuum. If we used a previous housing plan from Wilmette as a template for our affordable housing plan, why would we not reach out to other municipalities, including Wilmette, on this issue? Five, this is an opportunity. Board members or others have made notes of awards we have won for budgeting. Why would we not be a role model and win an award for effective and transparent government? This is a moment to turn a challenge into an opportunity. So just basically the thrust of all this is, please take this seriously. The board should discuss as a board in more depth what is going to be done about this. Is it going to be a little bit of presentation by the staff and a few comments from residents, or is it going to be a thorough look at this over a period of months, bringing in whatever voices we need, consultants, outside consultants, you know, checking with other municipalities, and just taking a deep dive and then actually changing how these things are done. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Jan?
Hi, Jan Sager. So it's 5 minutes and I have four pages and I'm going to try and whittle this down. So I researched the processes to fill vacancies in several municipalities with various populations and differing numbers of advisory bodies, and also looked at municipal code language, volunteer application forms, how information appears on the community websites, and if there are any booklets or manuals. And generally, I found that the three steps to fill a vacancy match what Lisa talked about. The vetting process is, I think, where much of this is in question. So the vetting is done by the president or the mayor in Riverside, Maywood, Forest Park, Elmhurst, St. Charles, and River Forest. By staff, and could be by the president, in Glen Ellen and LaGrange Park. And Oak Park is the exception, where a volunteer commission's, citizens commission, CIC, usually vets applicants. However, I found that the board president may also vet. So with Oak Park, I had a email conversation with then clerk Vicki Skaman, who is now the president. And two key statements, she said, the village clerk's office presents to the village president all applicants vetted by CIC when a vacancy exists. The village president determines when an applicant is added to the agenda. Some never move forward. Trustees receive a copy of applications with the village board agenda. She also confirmed, yes, the mayor has endorsed a candidate that has not gone through the CIC process. And the village clerk is still tasked with adding the candidate to the village agenda. The trustees are not part of the vetting process. The Oak Park ordinances, all the commission ordinances have the same language, subject to, let's see, appointed by the president, subject to the approval of the board of trustees, or advice and consent of the board of trustees. Riverside, oh, and Oak Park's a population of about 52,000 and about 19 commissions. Riverside has got about a population of 9,000, seven commissions maybe. And their website, their ordinances all say the same thing as Oak Park. And on their tab, they say all members of boards, commissions, and committees are appointed by the president and vice president of the board. Maywood, I had a conversation with the assistant to the mayor, and she confirmed that applications go to the mayor's office. The mayor is responsible for the vetting and decides when those applicants come to the agenda for board approval. And they have consistent language in their ordinance about the president role and the trustee role. Forest Park, same thing. They have a population of about 14,000, 13 commissions. Their ordinance language is consistent about the president role, the trustees role. And very clearly on the web pages of the boards and commissions, Mayor Hoskins appoints board members. Also on the commission volunteer form, there's a statement, quote, appointments to village boards and commissions are the privilege of the mayor with the advice and consent of the village council. Glen Ellen has a population of about 28,000, 11 or so commissions. I had a conversation with their village assistant manager, and she confirmed that applications go to the deputy clerk. Now, there's staff reviews or the president, and then the recommendations to the president for, you know, then it's the same steps going forward after the vetting. And their ordinances are very consistent about the language. St. Charles, they have a population of 33,000, 12 commissioners. They have a key statement on a booklet that they have. Boards and commissions are established by ordinance. in the village code. The mayor recommends qualified candidates to fill vacancy and the city council votes to approve appointments. And interestingly, they don't have a volunteer form. It says to apply, a letter of interest and resume should be mailed to the president's office. And their ordinance language supports their statements on their web pages. Elmhurst has 47,000 population, about 12 commissions. And they have a very clear statement about advisory board and commission appointments. When commission terms expire, the mayor conducts interviews with interested citizens to determine appropriate appointments. Citizens are always encouraged to inform the mayor if they would like to serve. And then their ordinance, again, their ordinance language is the same as everybody else's. LaGrange Park, 13,000 population, about eight, a little more commissioners. Fortunately, the Glenn Allen assistant manager worked at LaGrange Park. And so she could confirm that all of the processes are the same, including the vetting process. And then also on LaGrange Park's website, it says applications are always welcome and will be kept on file, so on and so forth. And they have ordinance language for the same. River Forest, about 10,000 population. Lisa just talked about the number of commissions and ad hoc committees. The web pages do contain purpose and duty statements with a link to the application. All of the ordinances, the language does support members are appointed by the president. The vetting process, I know that's unclear, and that's one of the things that can be approved. There was a statement made. Okay, I have an important statement.
Sure.
It was published in the Wednesday Journal in January, and it states, Oak Park volunteer webpage includes enabling language for each advisory body. A link to that takes us to a 25-page guide titled Enabling Language. However, the content is simply the ordinances copied and pasted from the village code book. I don't know why this example was cited to claim that River Forest doesn't have ordinances when it is so easy to prove that we do, not created months ago in the dark of night, but years ago. In summary, I think our village president should move forward with her appointments. We don't want vacancies going on for months. We need them appointed as soon as possible. So I want people to stop dwelling on the politics, stop the fear-mongering about our top government, and shift the focus to the things that Lisa listed in her presentation tonight. Thank you.
Is Kristen Coe on the line?
Oops, sorry. Is Kristen Coe on the line? I don't hear Kristen, but I'll certainly circle back as we move through the meeting in case she has an opportunity to jump on and join us. She did share comments via email, and those will be included in the record. Christopher Hillcoat. And for those of you who are using a telephone, to the extent that you are, if you need to unmute yourself, you would press *6 on your keypad to unmute yourself. Okay, I'll move along. Dan Lauber, you're next.
Thank you. In the 37 years I've lived in River Forest, I've had the privilege and honor to have served a total of 7 years on village boards and commissions, being appointed by President Regas to the Village Advisory Board on Finances. It worked out the plan to get us out of the Great Recession. It was about a year. And by President Regas on the Zoning Board of Appeals. And I may hold the record as being maybe the only person never reappointed to a second, third, or fourth, or fifth term on the ZBA. And I'm currently serving on the Age Friendly Advisory Committee. I'd like to make a couple of what I hope are constructive recommendations based on more than the insularity that we seem to worship in River Forest. We seem to think we can only look at Illinois communities for how to do things And as I hope you're fully aware, Illinois is not exactly renowned for sound government practices. First, I would recommend that we require applicants to provide a lot more information on their expertise on the subject matter of the body on which they wish to serve. I've seen applications of people who've been appointed and their whole argument was, I'm interested in this subject. That's no way to choose people. Second, applications should be vetted for accuracy. Applicants should provide concrete evidence of their expertise. I've worked with jurisdictions all over the country, and this requirement would not be unprecedented. Full disclosure of an applicant's qualifications should be made to the village board and the public at least 2 weeks before the appointment comes up for confirmation by the village board in order to allow adequate vetting of the individual. We continue to have this, I think, totally disgraceful process of agendas and packets released 3 or 4 or 5 days before a meeting. There is no reason on earth we can't adapt to releasing them at least 10 days before a meeting. It would take about 1 month to realign our procedures. We need to give the Village Board trustees time to really vet the nominees and not be a rubber stamp. We need, I think, to require applicants to attend a meeting of the entity on which they wish to serve, so they will get some idea of how it operates and if they really want to serve on that body. And they should be verified before a decision on the appointments are made. I would also recommend rational term limits. There's no excuse for anyone to be appointed to a committee or commission 4, 5, or even 6 times. The excuse has been given that this preserves institutional memory. I think 3 terms is adequate to preserve institutional memory. So I would suggest that the village adopt a term limit of 3 consecutive terms on any village appointed entity. We also need to, avoid this culture of insularity. It's essential that members of our village bodies, especially the Zoning Board of Appeals and Plan Commission, receive outside training on zoning and planning practices and procedures. I know a couple years ago, some trustees brought forth the idea to get some training on planning and zoning, outside training from the Illinois chapter of the American Planning Association that for a very low fee provides excellent training. And instead, the village president opted to have our own consultants provide that training in all of an hour. I can tell you right now that is not adequate time to learn how to handle zoning procedures and development applications, nor is it proper because we do a lot of things wrong. I served 5 years on the ZBA. I did my best to try to reform it. And while we made some changes, we've gone backwards since. We are not a model community for how these procedures work. Now, let me make it real clear. Frank Martin conducts the best and fairest public hearings I've ever seen. But once the public hearing part of the meeting ends and the ZBA starts discussing things, things fall apart, I think in large part because the members have not been adequately trained. Same thing with the Plan Commission. They have not received adequate training, and we have that available to us here at extraordinarily low cost. The training should be required as continuing education. It should not be a once and out. And failure to attend education sessions should be automatic grounds for removal. And if I recall correctly, there are states that require such training mandatory. There should also be mandatory training for appointees on how to properly and legally conduct meetings and public hearings if that falls within their scope. I would also like to recommend that all decisions should be required to be approved at a second reading no less than 3 weeks after the first reading of a proposal, whether it's before the Traffic and Safety Board, ZBA, Plan Commission, or any other body, including the Village Board, so that the public has adequate time to vet the decision and identify unintended consequences. The only exception would be genuine emergencies. All too often, a village body here closes public discussion and arrives at a decision based on misinterpretation and misrepresentation of the public discussion. A second reading would give the public a fair chance to evaluate the proposed decision and the members of the deciding body to give it more thought and reconsider it if warranted. Again, this recommendation applies to the village board as well. Finally, too many of our boards and commissions face the ongoing problem of having no professional staff or budget. The age-friendly committee is a perfect example of it from day one with no professional staff, and we're supposed to conduct an adequate assessment of the situation for seniors here, which includes a survey that needs to be random sample, and we have no budget to conduct what would be a $10,000 survey. We need to adequately staff and fund our bodies in addition to providing adequate training for their members. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. Megan Hodge.
Thank you, Lisa. I appreciate the opportunity to speak this evening and to provide my support for greater transparency, clarity, consistency, and a more robust advisory board volunteer process. To those on our village staff and board who are able to join this call, and I acknowledge, Lisa, as you shared earlier, that there is a limitation on the number of permitted trustees. I appreciate your commitment and service to our community. And to my fellow community members attending tonight's call, especially on such a nice evening, you know, I appreciate you sharing your voices and your perspectives on how we can enhance and optimize the engagement and thought leadership within our entire community through a more robust and defined advisory board volunteer process. I do have several recommendations that I would like to specifically address this evening, but I'd like to start with stating that my overall recommendation echoes that of John Grant's statement last week, as well as this week. And I really found his comment, let's allow the trustees themselves to lead a thorough review of this process, including research by trustees, direction for staff to do further research, and input to trustees by village residents to resonate. I likewise am in support of the sample action plan that John submitted at the May 24th, 2021 village board meeting. With regards to the specific recommendations and considerations that I would like to raise this evening, I raise these points not just as a River Forest community member, but also through my lens as an inclusive culture thought leader, strategic advisor, and fierce advocate for advancement, empowerment, and allyship as drivers of meaningful and enduring change. Through my corporate and nonprofit engagements, I work with a wide range of organizations across a number of industries to support their inclusive culture objectives and to turn their intentions into actions. So beyond just this humanity, and it's the right thing of fostering inclusion, of having representation on our boards, on our commissions, this representation is also critical for the health and strength and success of any organization, including our village of River Forest. Growth and progress will only occur when different views, priorities, personalities, social circles, families, and lived experiences do not just have a seat at the table, but are welcomed and respected at that table. Bias and groupthink are mitigated when all viewpoints are valued in the information gathering and decision-making processes, and when there is a foundation of trust within the community, on our board, and within these various commissions. This trust ensures that there is a strong feeling and sense of psychological safety, which is the critical component to ensuring that our trustees, our volunteer board and commission members feel supported in sharing their ideas and engaging in moderate risk-taking and raising concerns and asking questions authentically and without fear of repercussion. And that is the only way that we will leverage and optimize the thought leadership and diverse perspectives that we have at a table is there is that strong sense of psychological safety. And to help ensure that, we want to ensure that we have robust processes that help mitigate biases that we all have that are inherent, particularly in a village as small as ours, up front, so that everyone truly is having their voice heard and welcomed. To ensure that our growth and progress as we go forward is not stifled in the status quo of business as usual. This advisory board volunteer process must be clearly defined and publicly available. And this all needs to occur well in advance of appointments. So several of my specific recommendations include, specific to actual board or commissions, parameters around these. What are the objectives, the scope of work, the decision-making process of each board or commission? That is available upfront. That is public upfront. So individuals know if they are interested, if they have a skill set or a strength or past experience that they can contribute and add value. Volunteer parameters, and many of these have been touched on. I would say I certainly agree with all of Dan Lauber's earlier recommendations around the application process and criteria and expectations and requirements of applicants. But these applications should include specific experience pertinent to that board or that commission, or if it's a broader application, indicating where they could add value. Volunteer parameters, when you look at the composition of the board, should incorporate a demographic composition upfront and objectives, a target demographic objective upfront. And what do I mean by that? Well, demographic in our community, on our boards and commissions, should include geographic location, where people live in town, age and stage of life, socioeconomic status, engagement. And this ties to this broader kind of power structure around engagement on other boards or commissions, current or past, of the applicant, but frankly also as well as the applicant's family. And that includes spouses, but that includes parents and children too, because we have many multi-generational families in our community. And it's important to understand that. It's important to look and see what are the compositions, where do people sit, where do people have power and influence, just to ensure that there's balance and to do that upfront so that we're mitigating the perception of bias, whether it exists or not. And then we're getting the buy-in and engagement of the full community. Our applications must be robust and address all of these volunteer considerations. I would also suggest, based on some statements that were made earlier, that our applications include the recommendation or name of the individual who encouraged someone to apply, again, to mitigate biases, just to have these checks and balances up front. Completed applications must be provided to the full board, to the trustees, well in advance, so that this advise and consent process is made in a thoughtful and consistent manner, and that this is actually an informed vote versus the current check the box. Likewise, there should be processes established upfront for how many individuals we want on each of these boards or commissions so that they can be effective in terms of the scope and engagement of those individuals, how though it will be addressed if individuals need to be removed or if they resign. All of that should be addressed up front and should be clear, going into it and clear to the community and clear to the board and all of the trustees what that process might look like. And then there's this outreach to the community. And Lisa, you touched on this earlier, and it certainly echoed with me around, you know, being more intentional and ensuring that there is earlier outreach to the community about positions that are coming open that individuals could engage in or could kind of have on the radar. I think key to this is really the timing and to ensure there's advance notice around that. There also needs to be consistent outreach, you know, just as you would have in any organization, whether it's public or not-for-profit or private, this ability to share feedback. So this outreach needs to be to the community to say what is working. So not just to current elected officials, but what is working, what isn't working with, whether it's a specific board or commission, whether it's with the process, and that feedback can be provided on an anonymous basis if needed, so that it really is candid and that feedback makes its way to the entire board. Again, this is not about finger pointing. This is about ensuring processes so there is the perception and the reality of fairness, of representation, and of welcoming these voices and really optimizing the thought leadership we have in our community. You know, you touched on conflicts of interest earlier, Lisa, and I think this was probably not the direction you were going, but I do feel compelled to note something. You know, I certainly appreciate the information that Jan Sager shared earlier this evening, and that should be contemplated into the overall process. But again, that is one set of data and information from one individual, and it's not an unbiased source. You know, this is someone who was intentionally misleading the community in public posts at the end of January and early February about this very commission process. And so this is something that, while that information should certainly be reflected and contemplated, this gets to the point about why we have to make sure the perception of bias is mitigated upfront, that we are doing full and robust diligence. I'll wrap up my comments tonight by saying that I support and encourage that our current trustees lead a thorough review of this process. You know, there are a number of other specific recommendations mentioned tonight, and I'm sure that will be mentioned, that I agree with. I would be happy to share further thoughts or be a resource to the board at any point in time. Thank you.
Thank you. I do need to ask, so that we can be fair to everybody and consistent, that comments be kept to 5 minutes. So I'm sorry to interrupt. I certainly don't mean to be rude, but I see that there are still several individuals waiting to speak, and I'd like to make sure we get to everybody tonight. Next on our list is Margie Sikander.
I thank you so much for giving me a chance to speak, Lisa, and thank you to the three trustees who attended or attempted to attend the meeting. We appreciate it very much. Our current state is that there are at least 27 terms of appointments that expire April 30th, in addition to vacancies, including the majority of members on three of the 11 boards and commissions. Those boards and commissions have meetings scheduled in June before the next board meeting, June 28th. What are the implications of those openings, those expired terms, for our local government, our village government? We have qualified residents who volunteered, some multiple times, for specific committees or even generally to be on a committee, and were never appointed. We have a qualified volunteer who was allowed to participate in a meeting as a member, only to have his appointment voted against at the next board meeting. Some boards and commissions report few communications out of committee, so residents aren't aware of what they're doing. And some commissioners have served multiple lengthy terms, as mentioned by others earlier. We are thankful for the talents and the service that these volunteers give to serve, but we also need to open up participation to others to bring their talents and experience to serve. The Village Board has a sample action plan to consider from John Grant back in May. And may I remind you that all this topic was on the board agenda in February. Lisa Shiner's plan omits sharing of applications with the full board, which I believe should occur, that they should be shared with the full board. Going forward, the Village Board needs to remedy the functioning of the current appointment process. It needs to open appointments to other qualified residents. A great example is the willingness and enthusiasm of those who expressed interest in the DEI committee. It was overwhelming. The board needs to establish and communicate clear criteria for serving on various boards and commissions. It needs to recruit actively highly qualified volunteers with broad representation of the community. The board needs to clearly publicly communicate openings and reappointments in advance of terms ending. And the board needs to be actively and deeply involved in redesigning the appointment process to include these steps to deliver its responsibility to advise and consent. Jen Sager presented some research. Selective research. She chose selective communities, but she commingled those with various forms of government like mayoral government, aldermanic government, city council government that are not reflective of our village president and board government. So you shouldn't consider her research. She's an adducy campaign operative who spread erroneous campaign smear, demonstrating further her bias. I thank you for the opportunity to comment, and I look forward to the actions of the board going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Margie. Eskold Cosber.
Hi, how are you? Thank you, Lisa. And my name is Eskold Cosber. I live at 1235 Monroe Avenue. And thank you again for the opportunity to present my comments here. Tonight, I'm speaking in support of Mr. John Grant's recent recommendations to the River Forest Village Board for advisory body member selection, starting from February 8th, 2021. So given my past experience on how members of advisory bodies are selected in River Forest, I fully support Mr. Grant's suggestions. Of particular importance is Mr. Grant's idea of power sharing between trustees and the president with strong checks and balances. Currently, as I understand and have experienced it with the biased setting up of the Deer Task Force, the process of building advisory bodies in River Forest is primarily the purview of the village president, selecting candidates from a candidate pool and presenting those candidates to the village board for a mass vote on the body. The pool of candidates and their backgrounds is closely held by the village president. The village trustees do not get a chance to delve into the background of the candidates in the pool. This process has no safeguards whereby the village president can select those candidates supporting the village president's agenda, but not necessarily be in the interest of the majority of River Forest residents. This leaves a dangerous situation in which a select few hand-picked candidates influence the goings-on of the village. This clearly goes against the principle of diversity, equity, inclusion, and representation of the entire village. This risk in the current broken process of advisory board selection must be corrected. Having the village trustees intimately involved with the selection of the candidates will go a long way to improve the process. I respectfully and strongly request that Mr. Grant's suggestions be seriously reviewed, considered, and implemented by the village board in the very near future. And again, thank you for your time. And I ask that my comments be attached to the minutes of this meeting. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Mindy Creedy, next on the list.
Hi, this is Mindy Creedy, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak directly to my fellow citizens regarding the advisory board volunteer appointment process. I have written remarks, but I'm going to take a minute to suggest all of those disparaging comments regarding my fellow resident, Jan Sager, are inappropriate. If I were her, I'd hire a damn lawyer and sue all of you for all the false information you just shared publicly. That's inappropriate and ridiculous. I think to myself, why the heck would Jan like spend all this time researching something? Like, what does she have to get out of it? Is she a paid operative? Oh, my goodness. Must be terrible. No, she's just somebody who cares. She's smart. She's talented. She has her own agency and doesn't have to listen to all this nonsense from the group that's upset about these appointments. She's also a single female. Never married. Like me. And so you're
Mindy, could we try to stay on topic?
Well, it's ridiculous.
I understand two, that, but let's try
two is not there. One I could have handled. Two is not there. All right. back to my remarks. The mere idea of creating a group of unelected people to vet and recommend members to the boards, commissions, and advisory committees is the antithesis of transparency and inefficient. Moreover, the innuendos driving this movement are divisive and absurd. I've heard a lot of hemming and hawing about, I don't really understand what, I don't understand what the problem is. So Johan had a conversation with somebody, but that's not the process. The process, you fill out an application. So I want to take each step and analyze them. Step one, do we need more better recruitment efforts? Sure, the more the merrier. But do we need a group of unelected people to recruit? I don't think so. Current board and commission members, trustees, and engaged citizens all can and do recruit. For example, Julie Mueller recruited me to participate on the Sustainability Committee. Katie Brennan recruited my replacement and other committee members, commissioners. I don't think we need a separate group. Step two, do we need a group of unelected people to vet candidates? Definitely not. Every time I read about this proposal, I cringe. It immediately makes me think about the River Forest Caucus. I know this group is well-intended, but the criteria they use to vet the candidates are obscure, and therefore the candidates' endorsements seem to be, and many, many other residents, questionable. Step three, do we need a new determinative step? Heck no. I appreciate the fact that the village president can assess the composition of skills and experiences of the current board and commission members. I like that he or she can recommend persons that would enhance the diversity and productivity of these volunteer groups. Of course, this process only works the checks and balances legally given to the village board of trustees through their advice and consent role. Recently, because of advice and consent, the village board expanded the number of members on the Deer Advisory Committee. Through advice and consent, they approved the village president's nominees. One nominee was rejected because of advice and consent. The current process works all the way through advice and consent, and I much prefer to hold our elected officials accountable for the appointments to boards, commission, and advisory groups other than a well-intended group of unaccountable residents. Next. Government bodies should be deliberative without being bureaucratic, responsive, but not reactive. To my mind, adding a layer to the appointment process is inefficient. We don't need a middleman. Take, for example, the DEI ad hoc advisory group. The DEI had broad community support and received a unanimous yes VBOT vote. Even so, it's taken 15 weeks from the date the ad hoc group was established to hold a kickoff meeting on June 7th. Adding another layer could have pushed this out to 20 plus weeks or 5 months from establishment to kickoff, and well over 7 or 8 months for the DEI to provide any meaningful recommendations to the VBOT. We're a small community with the deliberative and responsive elected officials and village staff. We do not need bureaucracy. Finally, I want to address the divisive, hurtful, and unfounded innuendos associated with this movement. For the record, I have socially played on a bocce team with the village president, a former and current village trustee. I do not belong to the Oak Park Country Club, the River Forest Tennis Club, or the Panel Tennis Group. I resent the innuendos that an elected official runs some kind of underground mafioso group, only choosing residents in those circles. I resent the rumors that elected officials or multiple elected officials profit personally from village board approved endeavors. These sick and divisive rumors have to stop. Please stop pitting the south side against the north side. Please stop trying to create division between private home and multifamily apartment and condo residents. Please stop trying to delineate individuals by like-minded affinity group. What's next? Notorious bridge players? Nefarious religious people, those loathsome foster families. This movement assumes malintent and perpetuates mistrust. I ask my friends and neighbors to reject the conspiracy theories and assume positive temp from our volunteer village president and our trustees. I ask that you weigh our time-tested and broadly supported appointment process against intransparent and inefficient new processes. We need to improve communications about our current process and reject empowering word salad filled unelected middlemen. Thank you.
Thank you, Mindy. Kristen Coe. And I'm sorry, Kristen, just before you jump in, let me just say one thing. If you joined our meeting, I see that there are several individuals who joined our meeting a little bit later. If you did not sign up prior to tonight's meeting for public comment, no worries. If you could drop your name in the chat, if you would like to have public comments on the record, I would certainly appreciate that. And if you're unable to use the chat feature, we will still make an effort to get to you before the meeting wraps up. So, Kristen, my apologies for interrupting you, but welcome to the meeting, and we're happy to take your comments.
Thanks, Lisa, very much. My name is Kristen Coe. I live at 611 Edgewood Place in River Forest. My apologies on my jumping in here. I know my name was called earlier. I had another commitment and wasn't able to jump off that call quickly enough. In the interest of being efficient, I'm going to read my notes. And I apologize for having missed most of your comments and being unable to adapt mine to thoughts and suggestions that you might have offered. So if it appears that I have a tin ear, I in fact do, because I wasn't able to benefit from what you had shared earlier. Dear Village President and Board of Trustees, I'm writing in support and expressing in support of revisions to our committee commission process as proposed by various board community members, including those of John Grant. My thoughts about these recommendations are rooted in twin concerns around process and community engagement. In terms of process, what I see here is a communication opportunity. As someone who's been very involved in village service, I'd be hard pressed to explain the commission terms and the means by which one rolls onto or off of a commission. You all are much closer to this, and so I'm sure you are completely familiar with the process. And while I may be the only person for whom there's a lack of clarity, I'm guessing that that may not be the case. This isn't intended as a criticism, but rather as a statement that there does appear to be a communication opportunity available to the board. Namely, the opportunity exists to clarify the following. One, commission terms, do terms, term limits exist or do terms exist? Two, commission openings. Terms are listed on the website, but when commissioners are routinely reappointed for years on end, it's difficult to surmise for those of us unfamiliar with the process where openings exist in actuality as opposed to on paper. Three, the application process. The application process is listed on the website, but not the review selection process. And so to my mind, clarification is needed regarding the commission criteria, the commission composition, institutional memory goals for each commission, et cetera. And four, board review process. It would seem that the advise and consent role of the board can only happen if the above criteria are defined. Vacancy applications shared and advice solicited before the publication of the appointments made, and absent the implementation of each of these steps, I believe the advise and consent clause seems to be neutered if the board itself does not have the ability to weigh in on these positions. Another item I see as commission terms, River Forest has benefited from the expertise of numerous highly qualified residents, many volunteering over many consecutive years of service to the village. This is both an incredible gift to the community and also an incredible deterrent to the growth of successor volunteers. The District 90 School Board, of which I'm a former member, regulates this by self-limiting terms to 2 years or two terms or 8 years. Volunteer service is certainly very different, and this comment isn't intended to equate the two, but I believe the kernel of thought is valuable for one to consider, namely that as a community, we must grow our own volunteers by providing opportunities for them to learn, for them to earn experience and develop leadership skills, which serve both their place of service, their committee of service, and the greater village organization. I believe that when commissions seat, reseat, and recycle volunteers, especially those in leadership positions, the organic volunteer growth that ensures organizational health is stymied. This is not an indictment of individual volunteers with whom I've been incredibly impressed, but rather it's an acknowledgement of the risk to the village organization itself by developing expertise in a limited number of residents, and in doing so, inadvertently preventing others from gaining such experience. Separately, in terms of community engagement, I believe that commissions, as the village deploys them, are a mirror of the community. They are often the first point of access to the work of the village, and as such, they are an opportunity for the village to reflect back to the community its dynamic composition and values. When commissions become staid, they become inaccessible, both to those who engage with the commission and those who wish to serve on it. I also believe there needs to be... Pardon?
Sorry, Kristen, you're coming up on your time a little bit here.
I'll really quickly, thank you. For those, there's also needs to be a different tolerance for disengagement. For those of us who've come before commissions only to find commissioners routinely unprepared or absent, it's incredibly disheartening. We've all served with that person and been frustrated, but when that person has metaphorical sway over proposed work on our homes, or when we see a needed stop sign on our streets, that's wrong. And at that point, the entire village process is rightfully indicted. Baselines of engagement must be defined and enforced. Life happens. We all need to be able to accommodate that, but we also need to then demand a resignation and have in place an appointment for a replacement of that position, so that village residents and operations are not negatively impacted. I thank you very much for your time. And Lisa, I'm very appreciative of scooting me in here under the wire. And I believe that a well-publicized commission process will reinvigorate community engagement, expand ownership for village operations to a broader base within the community, and expand faith in our village system of operations. Thank you very much to everyone for your consideration.
Thank you, Kristen. So that concludes the list of individuals who have asked to speak. If there's anyone else, this is your opportunity to jump in. I'm not seeing anyone, but please feel free. You can either raise your hand, you can just drop a note in the chat, and we'll be sure to call on you. So the other thing I would note, too, is if there are any comments that you can think of that you would like to share after the meeting, you're certainly welcome to do so. A few of you have offered to provide your written comments to me via email to be included in the record of this meeting. I would certainly appreciate that. My email is in the chat box. I dropped that earlier in there. However, if you weren't able to see that, it's LSCHEINER. I know I probably said that way too fast, at VRF.us. The other thing you can do too is just go to the village's website. You can just type my name in the search feature and you should be able to find my email address on the Village's website, but I'm happy to take all of that information and gather it together. So just quickly to talk about conclusion and next steps. First of all, thank you to everyone who came tonight. I know that this is a time commitment and away from other things that are important to you. I appreciate that this is important to you as well. I know how important your community is to you, and that it's important to staff as well. So thank you very much for taking the time to join us tonight. The next steps are that staff will assemble this information and prepare a report to the Village Board of Trustees. The next Board of Trustees meeting is June 28th, not June 14th. They're on a summer meeting schedule, and that'll be at 7 p.m. And I anticipate that this would be on the agenda for that meeting. So you can find that information. There was a question that was entered into the chat feature that I'm happy to take an answer. This is from Margie. And if you don't mind, I'll share the question. Who is Deputy Village Clerk that keeps records of the applications? Who does the official training? So the Deputy Village Clerk works in the administration office. Her name is Sarah Pfeiffer, and she holds the role of Deputy Village Clerk and also Management Analyst. And so she collects all of those applications and keeps that. The official training comes from a variety of sources. So as Dan mentioned, there is official training that the Village provides with regard to the Zoning Board and the Development Review Board. I understand he has some feedback about how he thinks that training should go, and I appreciate those comments. But that information is provided to those members. And there's also a link through the Attorney General's office on the official, on Open Meetings Act training that appointed officials are required to take when they are first appointed. There were some problems with that website recently, so I know they're working to resolve it, and we're working with our appointed officials, particularly newly appointed bodies, to make sure that they have that information and are well prepared. So if anybody has any questions, again, please feel free to reach out. I'm happy to do what I can to try to answer them as quickly as possible. So that will conclude the meeting tonight, unless there's anything else to add. I appreciate everybody's time and comments, and thank you again for coming out.